Christ, Brutus and Cassius, who betray Julius Caesar and the idea of empire, and Satan, Lucifer himself, who betrays God. So we have at the very bottom complex fraud, if you will, fraud against those with whom there's some special trust. In simple fraud, what we have are a series of pits, bulges is the word in Italian, where we go from one level of simple fraud to the next. We start out with a very interesting category. We start out with pimps and seducers. I think Dante's doing something very deliberate here to show us about the nature of fraud, what fraud really means. Because we started with a sexual sin in the circle of incontinence, those who subjected reason to desire. And now we have sexual sins at the beginning of fraud as well. The interesting thing here, though, is that this is a sin where desire, or at least sexual desire, doesn't play a very large part at all. Because what happens is that, you know, if you are a seducer in the way Dante means it, you're doing it not for the sexual pleasure involved. You're not interested in that. You're basically interested in doing it so that you can marry the boss's daughter and get tons of money. All right? Or if you are a panderer, what you're doing is selling somebody else's body so that you can get rich from it. In other words, the way in which it's much more a sin that starts with the intellect than something that starts with the desires. And I think that he's deliberately presenting one version of sexual sins and contrasting them with another so that we'll see the difference between incontinence and fraud.
And then we go through a series of ditches. For example, we have the simoniac popes, and we have the fortune tellers, and we have the grafters, and we have the hypocrites, and we have the thieves. And finally, in Inferno 26, we arrive in one of these bulges, one of these ditches, one of these subdivisions of the eighth circle that actually we spend two cantos talking about, and Dante has two different conversations with two different figures, one of whom is from classical antiquity and one of whom was more or less contemporary. And one of the difficulties that we've traditionally had in understanding fully these two cantos is, for most sins, there's an obvious label. We've been giving you lots of labels of sins. Well, the traditional way of labeling the sin of the ditch that's discussed in 26 and 27 is false counsel, the sin of giving false counsel. But clearly, in the narrow sense of what that means, there's much more to the sin than that. And in fact, there isn't a good one or two word term for it. Perhaps that's one of the reasons that Dante gives us two pretty much different versions of it, because it is a little bit harder to define, a little bit harder to reduce to one word what all the dimensions are of what we would call false counsel.
It certainly seems to be a lot more than simply giving bad advice. Okay, you can sort of start with that. And it seems to be also something that is true in these bulges in general. False counsel shows the poet's concern with the failure to tell the truth has disastrous consequences for the community. One of the things that's very interesting is that in some way or other, all the different species of simple fraud, those bulges that make up Circle 8, turn out to be connected with lying in some form or another. The failure to tell the truth has most disastrous consequences for the community.
And the people we're going to meet, the character out of originally the Odyssey, but indirectly from Roman literature, it goes directly to Dante, Ulysses or Odysseus, we're going to meet as the first of the two exemplars of this sin. The second one, Guido da Montefeltro, a more or less contemporary Italian nobleman, contemporary to Dante. Both of them are men clearly of extraordinary intelligence, extraordinary powers of persuasion. They are both very, very good leaders at a certain level in the sense of being able to organize things, of being able to convince people to follow them, of being able to think of clever ways of doing business in the world. On the surface, they're very smart, clever wheeler-dealer types.
And in fact, false counsel seems to imply that the sinners have somehow used superior intelligence to defraud others, or to get others to follow them, or to get others to commit evil. Now, it's kind of interesting that Dante chooses a kind of ancient example and a modern example. I think he wants us to see that this is a sin that's been prevalent for a long time. As Bill said, the example that he picks from the ancient world is Ulysses, and in some ways he's one of Dante's most famous creations, even though he's not a creation at all, because before Dante he was a character in Virgil, before Virgil he was a character in Homer. In Virgil, he represents essentially